The first hint that the geography was shifting didn't come from a rocket launch, a daily update, or a dramatic stage donation. It came from a quiet morning in Boca Chica, long before daylight, when Musk walked the border of the Starship launch pad with his hands in his pockets, gaping at the massive structure in front of him. Workers were still asleep. The wind was the only thing making noise. The rocket stood there like a giant waiting to wake up. Musk loved these hours. No cameras. No debates. No noise about requests or politics. Just engineering in its purest form. But that morning pulled commodity differently out of him, commodity heavier. He'd been carrying it for a while, letting it sit in the background while he dashed from extremity to extremity. Now, it eventually demanded attention. Starship could work. It was and a dream presently. It was a machine. A dangerous, complex, insolvable machine, but still real. Once it flew reliably, once it could land constantly, once it could carry dozens of people at a time, everything would change. The coming chapter of humanity would end be theoretical, it would be passing in real time. But then's the part he infrequently admitted out loud, changing the world comes with a strange kind of loneliness. When you push this hard for this long, you start living in the future while everyone differently lives in the present. He knew what was coming. He could see it. He could taste it. But he also understood the resistance it would spark. Every major technological shift came with disunion. He'd lived through further of them than utmost people get to substantiation. Tesla's early days were a battleground. The review was constant. Electric buses, what and work. Batteries will no way gauge. He's wasting plutocrat. Now the same voices were pretending they had always believed. SpaceX had it indeed worse. People mocked the idea of wharf rockets. They said private spaceflight was a circus. Also, they watched Falcon boosters touch down on drone vessels like they were dropping gently onto pillows. Starlink started as a punchline, too. A bunch of candescent blotches ruining the night sky. But when disasters hit, when people lost internet access for weeks, those blotches came a lifeline. And now Neuralink, the most sensitive of them all, was stirring a storm. The idea of brain-machine interfaces made people uneasy. Musk understood that. But the possibility of restoring mobility, vision, speech, those were reasons he refused to decelerate down. He'd watched Parkinson's eat down at his own father's hands at one point. He knew what neurological fragility felt like over near. So yes, the world was tipping. And episode 13 opens in the middle of that cock. As the morning cheered, workers began arriving one by one. Headlamps. Coffee mugs. Tool belts. Musk watched them walk past the sword mammoth brewing above them. He wondered how numerous of them really understood how major their work was. Presumably not all. Perhaps not indeed half. That was ent their job. Their job was to weld, bolt, line, test, and make. His job was to see the whole picture, a picture so large it frequently kept him awake long after everyone differently had gone home. Latterly that morning, Gwyn Shotwell joined him on the observation sun deck overlooking the construction yard. She did ent desolate time with small talk. "You're allowing about timelines again," she said.
He signed.
"Timelines are each we have. You're stretched thin." He didn't deny it. Between Tesla's global expansion, SpaceX's brewing Starship mileposts, Neuralink's forthcoming clinical trials, AI safety work, and the constant pressure from investors, controllers, and the public, he felt like a constellation being pulled piecemeal by graveness. Shotwell was ent there to condemn. She was there to anchor him. "You do ent need to do everything at formerly." Musk rubbed the reverse of his neck. "That's the thing. Perhaps we do." The discussion hung in the air. Shotwell had seen him push through insolvable workloads. She respected it. She also knew it was ent sustainable ever. That evening, as Musk walked through the Starbase engineering structure, he caught particles of exchanges. People arguing about methane pumps, thermal penstocks, orbital circles, manufacturing forbearance. That energy gave him an alternate wind. These masterminds were ent then for hype. They were ent then for a payment bump. They were then because they believed in the insolvable. But indeed inside the company, there was a quiet content that masterminds rumored about without naming it directly. Musk was getting more changeable. Not illogical, just less patient, more violent, more willing to take hops before others felt ready. A SpaceX stager formerly said, "When Elon says commodity is insolvable, it presumably is. When he says it's possible, it'll be. And when he says it must be, buckle up because everything is about to explode." Occasion 13 captures exactly that moment, Musk crossing the line between possible and must. Around this time, a set of classified geopolitical reports landed on his office. SpaceX had become a major player in global communication networks, which meant Starlink was now part of transnational security conversations. Some countries wanted to regulate it. Others wanted to control it. Many wanted to shut it out entirely. The reports painted a picture Musk had always stressed Earth was getting more unstable. Climate issues. Conflicts over coffers. Power struggles fueled by AI. The usual political noise had escalated into commodity, more unpredictable. Humanity had all the tools to break its problems, yet ever kept tripping over the same cycles. Strategists advised that the coming decade would be defining. That's a polite way of saying fragile. Musk did partake those reports intimately, but they burned into him. Every runner fed the same belief he'd held since his early 20s. Humanity demanded a backup plan. Mars was a luxury dream. It was insurance. It was a pressure stopcock. It was the difference between being stuck in one fragile biosphere and having space to expand, introduce, and survive long term. One night, after reading through another set of grim vaticinations, he drove alone to the edge of the launch point. He sat in his auto, machine off, watching the faint gleam of welders working through the night. A quotation came back to him, commodity he'd formerly said half, jokingly, "I want to die on Mars. Just not on impact." But the deeper verity underneath was this: he didn't want humanity to die on Earth. That's the emotional core of episode 13. The coming morning, he gathered the Starship engineering leads. The room smelled like coffee and fresh essence. Everyone looked tired. Some looked nervous. Musk didn't bother warming them up. "We're speeding up," he said. "A many mastermind set," allowing he meant days, perhaps weeks. He clarified, "I want a mortal-able Starship prototype ready sooner than planned. Months sooner." The room went still. Someone cleared their throat. Someone differently dropped a pen. A propulsion lead spoke first, choosing his words carefully. "However, we'll lose testing cycles if we compress the timeline that much." "I know." That raises threat. "I know." He was dismissing them. He was accepting the weight of what he was asking. They goggled at him in silence. For times, Musk had told them that threat was the adversary. Recession was. But this was different. This was pairing a week off a schedule. This was bending the timeline until it moaned. Eventually, Shotwell stepped in. "We'll rework the roadmap," she said. "But we need clarity. What's the reason for the acceleration?" Musk didn't depict it. He didn't pull out the geopolitical reports. He didn't talk about AI pitfalls or resource conflicts or the fragile state of the climate. He knew those reasons sounded abstract to people who were living day to day inside pressure vessels and energy lines. So he answered with the simplest thing he could say without overwhelming them. "Because the world isn't moving presto enough. And we do get horizonless chances." The room acclimated. Masterminds changed ganders. Some upset. Others felt a swell of purpose. Everyone understood one thing: Musk was asking for a schedule update. He was sounding an alarm. Outside the meeting room, as Musk walked down the hallway, he felt the familiar swell of adrenaline he always got when a charge escalated. He was sure if this acceleration would work. He was indeed sure it was safe. But he knew it was necessary. Utmost people live their lives responding to the present. Musk was living his life responding to the future. And the future was beginning to call louder than ever. Occasion 13 ends on that pivot point. The moment Musk chooses speed over safety, urgency over comfort, the unknown over the predictable. Not because he wanted to take reckless pitfalls, but because he saw commodity utmost people humanity's window for growth was still open. but it was Ent going to stay open ever. And he was Ent willing to stay for someone differently to push through it. The day after the meeting, SpaceX felt different. You could smell it walking through the corridors. People rumored more. Observers glowed late into the night. Masterminds gripped caffeinated drinks like lifelines. Every platoon, from heat, guard specialists to cryo masterminds, began scuffling with the same question, how do you compress times into months without losing your mind? Then's the thing most Outlanders do and understand about SpaceX. It's not just a plant. It's a belief system with welding goggles. People do and join for comfort. They join because they want to touch commodity major. But belief does Ent abolish prostration. And urgency does Ent magically add hours to a day. So when the acceleration order came down, responses resolve right down the middle. Some masterminds felt galvanized. This was the moment they inked up for. The moment where insolvable timelines would force new situations of creativity. Others felt dread percolating and around the edges. They'd seen what rush development could do. They'd watched prototypes explode into rolling pistols. They knew the line between bold and reckless was razor thin. Inside that pressure, Musk moved from station to station, reviewing designs, asking hard questions, discarding entire approaches with a single judgment. He was Ent trying to be delicate. He was trying to break the backups that hovered the schedule. Here he focused at a thermal pipe array. These were Ent's survivor entry. Fix the Kling's strength. He stood over a propulsion illustration. The energy routing introduces gratuitous turbulence.
Simplify it.
He reviewed Worf, leg variations. These crowds are too fragile. Suppose like aircraft masterminds. People climb to keep up. But then's the twist, the pressure, did Ent crush the platoon. It stoned them. SpaceX has a particular culture. One Shotwell helped shape and Musk corroborated. You're allowed to fail, but you're not allowed to fail the same way doubly. That mindset demurred into overdrive. Within days, the plant bottom converted. Large essence rings rolled into assembly. Heat, guard penstocks were sorted like precious monuments. Raptor machines arrived briskly, then markers could be slided on. Technicians in thick gloves crawled outside pristine, sword shells tensing bolts in positions that would make yogis recoil. The acceleration timeline was Ent a bare schedule change. It was an earthquake, and the foreshocks reached much further than Boca Chica. Tesla felt the vibration. Two Tesla's directors were Ent thrilled when they heard that SpaceX was swelling into Musk's immediate precedence again. Tesla was formerly preparing major releases, autopilot updates, new battery improvements, the coming Word compact vehicle, and global plan expansion. Every one of those systems demanded guidance, decision, timber, and Musk's notorious asseveration on perfection. When he shifted further attention to SpaceX, Tesla leaders felt a blend of relief and fear. Relief because Musk's presence could be inviting. Fear because his absence meant harder opinions landed on their shoulders. One elderly mastermind explained it impeccably to a coworker. When Elon is then, the pressure is insane. When he's gone, the query is worse. That strange dynamic defined Tesla's day, to day meter. Musk would appear unannounced, review 3 months of work in 20 twinkles, ask questions nothing anticipated, also evaporate back to Starbase before anyone had completely reused the discussion. But this time, after the Starship acceleration decision, he stayed down longer than usual. Tesla's operations continued, but without his gravitational force, brigades drifted into debates they typically would have avoided. Some wanted to stay conservative. Others pushed for threat. And in the background, Tesla's board felt the Temblers too. They'd been then before, moments when Musk poured his energy into SpaceX, letting Tesla run on instigation. But they also knew the stakes were advanced now. The automotive world was changing presto. Challengers were catching up on EV technology. China was pushing aggressive electric models. Regulatory battles were tensing. Tesla didn't need Musk every second. But it did need him anchored, which raised an uncomfortable question: how numerous fronts can one person fight on before commodity breaks? Neuralink enters the limelight while Tesla and SpaceX jockeyed for Musk's time. Neuralink broke into captions with a clinical advance. The first case, with a completely implanted Neuralink interface, managed to control a computer cursor with surprising perfection. Vids spread online, generating admiration, dubitation, fear, and admiration all at formerly. Neuralink masterminds celebrated still. They'd been working under violent ethical scrutiny for times. Every bitsy step forward felt like moving through a minefield. But Musk treated Neuralink else than his other companies. SpaceX was ambition. Tesla was revolution. Neuralink was particular. It touched the mortal body. It touched the brain. It gave people lost capacities back. That signified to him in a different way. So indeed, while Starship consumed utmost of his attention, he still sculpted out late, night calls with Neuralink leads, checking on progress, pushing timelines, asking questions nothing differently dared to ask. Can we gauge the electrodes without overheating towel? What's the upper threshold for safe signal bandwidth? How far are we from restoring full branch stir in spinal cases? These were end commercial questions. They were mortal questions. And they suggested at commodity deeper Musk was ent just erecting machines. He was trying to upgrade the mortal condition itself. But urgency always has a dicker. Neuralink brigades felt pressure rising too. They were entering home drug had no way seen. Every decision had consequences that went beyond engineering, ethical, natural, cerebral. And Musk's acceleration instinct didn't always align with the tolerance needed for medical safety. Some scientists pushed back. Some stayed silent. Some still batted leaving. The same pressure Musk had sparked at SpaceX now flitted at Neuralink. Not because people didn't believe in the charge. Nearly everyone there believed. But belief does end abolish the fear of moving too presto. A rift begins to open by Midir. The pressure surge Musk had transferred splashing outward eventually reached its most fragile edge, the public. For a decade, Musk had been both respected and blamed, but now the review began changing flavor. It wasn't just about his opinions. It was about the scale of his influence. Journalists questioned how important global structure depended on one man's judgment. Judges bothered about Starlink's political power. Environmental groups challenged Starship's expansion. Medical ethicists batted Neuralink's trials. And lawgivers, always late to the party, suddenly wanted sounds, restrictions, fabrics, oversight. Musk didn't enjoy any of it, but he anticipated it. You cannot change the world without getting the lightning rod for every storm. Still, there was commodity new in the air, the sense that Musk was no longer simply an entrepreneur. He was getting an institution commodity people wanted to regulate, limit, define. And institutions do and get the freedom to move presto. Back at Starbase, while debates brewed far and wide differently, Boca Chica converted into a pressure cooker. Starship prototypes were rolling out one after another. Masterminds had espoused a meter make presto, test presto, explode sometimes, learn always. Each launch attempt pulled the entire world's attention. Cameras lined the sand. Live streams buzzed. Every time a prototype lifted off, Musk stood with his eyes narrowed, hands clasped behind his reverse, absorbing every detail. And every time commodity went wrong, a leak, a stopcock failure, a structural buckling, he replied the same way, good. Now we know. Failures didn't shake him. They accelerated him. But beneath his usual intensity, commodity inside him tensed a little further each day. He could feel the weight of the timeline pressing on his shoulders. Not a deadline set by investors or schedules. A deadline set by the Earth itself. He kept rereading those classified reports at night. They no way got less grim. A quiet discussion that changes the tone one evening, as the sun sank over the gulf, Musk stood on a drift overlooking the ocean. The wind whipped the beach around him. He was ent allowing about launches or batteries or brain interfaces. He was allowing about fragility, the fragility of single globes, single species, single timelines. Shotwell approached from before. She didn't say anything at first. She just watched the swells with him. After a nanosecond, she spoke. You're pushing harder than you ever have. He didn't answer. You're not wrong, she continued. The world is getting changeable. But if you compress the timeline too far, you'll break the people erecting it. Musk suffed. not because he dissented, but because he knew she was right. "What's the volition?" he said still. "Staying until it's too late?" Shotwell turned to him. "That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying we need a plan, not a fear." He closed his eyes for an alternate, just one alternate, also jounced. This was why he trusted her further than nearly anyone. She predicated the corridor of him that drifted too far into the future. The breaking point, despite her advice, the acceleration continued. Not recklessly, but relentlessly. Starship was inching near to mortal capability. Tesla was stabilizing under distributed leadership. Neuralink was gaining global scrutiny. Starlink was expanding faster than controllers could track. But Musk was wearing thinner than he realized. He was ent sleeping enough. He was ent freeing. He was ent allowing time out between heads. One morning, during a design review, he snapped at a mastermind, not a normal sharp correction, but commodity harsher. The room set. Musk stopped mid-sentence, realizing the tone in his voice was ent just desirousness. It was prostration. He dismissed himself still and walked out. Shotwell set up him sitting outdoors on a Essen staircase, elbows on his knees, gaping at the concrete. He didn't look defeated. He looked tired in a way that went past physical. "Perhaps I overstated it," he said vocally. "You suppose," she replied, sitting beside him. He laughed a small, tired laugh and rubbed his tabernacles. The moment was ent-dramatic. It was ent-some collapse. It was commodity further honest, a man admitting his limits for the first time in a long time. The recalibration over the coming many days, Musk made a subtle shift. Not decelerating down, he was unable of that, but recalibrating. He began delegating further opinions to platoon leads. He sculpted out specific hours for sleep and forced himself to follow them. He created a new precedence board fastening on charge critical tasks. SpaceX felt the change incontinently. Not lower intensity, just more structure. Tesla felt the shift to Musk was more present, more predicated. Neuralink served the most. He heated more, pushed less suddenly. The acceleration remained. The urgency remained. But the haste came sustainable rather of explosive. That's the heart of episode 13, part 2. The moment where Musk realizes indeed the future needs pacing. Indeed, a revolution needs meter. Indeed, a man driving a species forward has to cover the machine. The first thing Asha noticed was the sound. Not loud, not quiet, just wrong. A low hum, like essence wobbling against bone. It strained through the underground chamber, as if the gravestone itself was shivering. She pressed her back against the ancient pillar, forcing herself to breathe laggardly. Malik squinched a many way down, one hand gripping the strange obsidian dagger they'd taken from the temple. His knuckles were white. Indeed, he, who generally laughed through peril, looked concave around the eyes. "What this means," he rumored, "is that commodity just woke up." Asha didn't answer. She formerly knew. The shade of suns, the ancient tempera winding across the chamber, had begun to glow. 12 suns, each representing a misplaced world, palpitated like gifs. The 13th sun, the one every scroll advised her about, flitted weakly in the center, like a dying star refusing to stay dead. The veiled bones were coming. Asha stepped forward, ignoring the way her knees wanted to fold. "We stopped the activation. No matter what." Malik gave a thin smile.
"Yeah.
Sounds easy when you say it." But he followed. The bottom cracked beneath their bases as they approached the center. The tempera's light bled into the air, turning dust molecules into drifting fireflies. At the center of the chamber lay the Heliarch Gate, an indirect platform made of twisting rings. Each ring turned sluggishly, grinding like the gears of a broken timepiece. A shape rose in the middle. At first, Asha allowed it was bank, but also it opened two eyes. Not mortal. Not indeed alive. More like pieces of night sky trapped in a cranium, shaped figure. The darkness curled, rearranging itself, taking form, also losing it again. A voice, ancient and layered, slid into the room. "The 13th sun breathes again." Asha felt the words in her teeth. Malik staggered, grabbing her arm. Yeah, nope, absolutely not talking to bank monsters, he murmured, the being lifted its head. You bear the mark of the Sunkeeper. You open doors you cannot close. Asha stepped forward despite her pounding casket. I didn't open anything. Your people did. Centuries agone. A ripple passed through the reality, as if it set up that entertaining. And now you'll finish what they began. A unforeseen jolt of energy shot from the gate. Asha cried out, slightly stumbling away as a ray of light sculpted a molten line across the bottom. Malik dragged her behind a fallen pillar. We need a plan, he cried. Asha browsed out. The rings of the gate were spinning faster. However, the robe between worlds would tear if they aligned impeccably. We break the rings, she said. With what? My fascinating personality. Asha refocused at the obsidian dagger. That thing was forged to kill beings like it. Perhaps it can break the medium. Malik blinked. You suppose this flimsy toothpick can smash the cosmic blender out there? I suppose it's our only shot, he suffed. Of course it is. The shadow, being's form stretched overhead, filling the air like storm shadows forming a chime. Each word shook dust from the ceiling. You cannot stop the awakening. The suns will rise. The worlds will burn. Asha cried over it. I will ent let yours rewrite ours. The being didn't answer this time. It just moved, not walking, just appearing. One moment it was near the gate. The coming, it impended over them, its elongated fritter's running shadow that whizzed against the gravestone. Malik replied first. He dived, slashing with the dagger. The blade cut through the critter like slicing bank, but for the first time, the thing quailed. A laugh tore through the chamber, not loud, just incredibly deep, like a mountain moaning. Asha seized Malik's wrist.
That worked, she said.
Do it again, but at the gate. He jounced and dashed. The critter recovered incontinently. Asha didn't suppose. She threw herself in its path. Shadow tendrils wrapped her torso, lifting her off the ground. She clawed at the suffocating cold tightening around her lungs. You're mortal, the being rumored.
You break. You end.
Why fight the ineluctable rise? Asha forced the words out. Because this world is mine. She jammed her hand into the tendrils, forcing her inner energy through her when the way the Sunkeeper training tutored her. Light burned. Real light, her light. The critter dropped her with a gasp. She hit the ground hard, but didn't stop moving. Malik was formerly playing at the spinning rings of the gate. Sparks burst each time the dagger struck. The first ring cracked. The alternate buckled. The third defied with a metallic howl. The critter surged toward him. Asha dived its base, or whatever passed for its legs indeed, though her body screamed at her. The murk tore at her skin, but she held on. Malik.
Now.
He raised the dagger and drove it into the final ring. A bedazzling shockwave erupted. The entire chamber shook. The tempera suns flitted hectically. The shadow, being released a roar that rattled Asha's cranium. Cracks spread across the gate's rings like spiderwebs. Also, with a sound like thunder collapsing inward, the medium shattered. The light failed. Silence slammed into the chamber. The critter staggered back. Its form flitted.
Shrank.
Lost description. You have delayed the rise. Its voice was weaker now. But the 13th sun stirs. And when it wakes, all worlds will kneel. Asha stood, bruised, shaking, furious. Also, I'll be there staying. The critter dissolved, not fading, but unraveling like bank smelled into a vacuum. A slithery smell of burnt ozone dallied in its place. Malik dropped to the bottom, casket heaving. Tell me we won. Asha looked at the ruined gate. We bought time. He moaned. Detest that answer. Steps echoed behind them. Asha strained, but it was Ent another critter. It was someone she had Ent anticipated to see again. Vela the Deserter Scholar, the woman who formerly tried to immure Asha to study, her Sunkeeper capacities stepped into the chamber with a lantern in hand. Her cloak was torn, her hair disheveled, but her sharp eyes still glinted with computation. Well, she said casually, looks like you broke the ancient gate of worlds. Again. Asha strengthened. What do you want? Vela glanced at the tempera, the shattered rings, the fading dust of the critter. Believe it or not, I'm then to help. She lifted a small essence device humming with faint energy. Because, whatever you just woke up, it was Ent alone. Malik swore under his breath. Asha stepped closer. Explain. Vela soughed. I tracked seismic anomalies across every ruin tied to the suns. All of them spiked in the last hour. Not one. Not two. All 12. Asha's stomach dropped. 12. Vela jounced grimly. The 13th sun is their anchor. However, the other suns will end just awaken if it rises. They'll meet. Malik lowered. Meet like a reunion. More like an extermination, Vela said. Stars collapsing into a single point of cosmic pressure. Every world tied to them gets dragged into the pack, including ours. Asha felt the chamber cock. So breaking the gate was end enough. No, Vela said vocally. But there's a way. A hopeless bone. Asha met her eyes. Tell us. Vela dithered, a rare crack in her confident veneer. There's a place called the Solar Arc, a structure outside our world, the only place erected to control the suns. She glanced at Asha, and only a sunkeeper can pierce it. Malik moaned. Great. A cosmic road trip. Asha sustained herself. The fear was real, but determination cut sharper. How do we reach it? Vela's smile was thin and uneasy. You're not going to like the answer. A grumble shook the chamber again, deeper than ahead, nearly like commodity enormous had shifted beneath reality. Vela refocused overhead. The solar arc is and a place you walk into. It's a place you fall into. Asha raised an eyebrow. Fall, Vela jounced. The arc lies beneath the crowds of our macrocosm. You have to jump through a breach point. Malik squinted. So, principally we throw ourselves into a cosmic billabong and supplicate? Vela signed. More or less. Asha soughed.
Fine.
Where's the nearest breach? Another earthquake megahit. This time, dust rained from the ceiling. The tempera burned violently, all 12 suns glowing at formerly. Vela exhaled sluggishly. That. Asha and Malik turned. A crack was forming at the center of the chamber, not in the gravestone, but in the air. A hairline split in reality itself. Light strained through it like molten gold. The breach. Malik goggled. You have got to be kidding me. Asha stepped forward. Her heart pounded. The breach widened, pulsing like a crack in time. Everything in her prompted her to step back. But she didn't. This is our path, Asha said. Vela jounced. Once you go through, there's no guarantee you come back the same. Malik murmured. We're formerly not the same. The breach palpitated lustrously. The air bucket like a living thing. Asha took Malik's hand. Ready? No, he said actually. But let's do it anyway. They met Vela's eyes one last time. She gave a solemn nod. Find the arc, stop the suns. Or everything ends. The chamber roared. The breach split wide, a bedazzling tear of white, gold light. Asha squeezed Malik's hand. Jump. And they hopped.